You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, the show of all sorts that sorts all by serving up a slice of life. What is your order? Ah, I see. The special it is. We'll be there to deliver ASAP. Cosmic Pizza Podcast Special Delivery.
Hello and welcome to the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. I'm Dan in the UK, and with me today, as always, is
Paul from the UK.
John from Canada.
And we are here to serve you a slice of life. And this week, it's octane-fueled shenanigans as we crank it into full gear, as we channel our inner Gary Newman. Cars, get it? Yeah? No? Fair enough. And we act like a couple of Allman Brothers with Jessica. No one's going to get it. Okay. And we are going to interview two guys who went on a little journey in this summer on something called the Two Ball Rally 9 in 4, which apparently will make sense once we do that. It's not a Borg designation for all of the geeks out there. Then we're going to go over to Paul and we're going to talk about something he did at Brands Hatch as well, which was all perfectly legal. So it's okay. And right, we're gonna go straight into our guest now. Eagle-eared listeners, is it eagle-eared? What do you say to people who listen to podcasts?
Bat-eared.
There we go. Bat-eared listeners will recognise our two guests as Dave Martin and Phil Russell. Say hello, guys.
Hello,
hey guys.
There we go. All done. Right, the episode's all wrapped up. You two crazy cats went on a little bit of an expedition this summer, mm-hmm. To the Two Ball Rally. So could you tell us, what was the Two Ball Rally?
We can tell you. Do you want me to start, Phil?
Yeah, go on.
Okay. So the Two Ball Rally it's a rally, funnily enough, organised by some guys. And Phil came to me, kind of tagged me on
before
a Facebook
COVID.
Post. It was way before COVID,
yeah.
And said, look at this. This looks amazing. We should go and do it. So what it was the idea is it's a rally across Europe. You did 9 countries in 4 days, and you had a budget on the car that you had to buy. Now, originally, the budget was £567. That was it. That was the limit you could spend on a car. It has gone up recently because, being topical, cost of living's gone up. So secondhand cars have gone up. So it's now, I think, 7, 8, 9 for a budget car. And basically, it was 9 countries in 4 days. So we did the original route, which is what they do. And it was the UK. So we started off in the UK. We went UK, France, Belgium, Luxembourg, Germany, Austria, Monaco, France, and then back to the UK. We could have also added in Switzerland and Liechtenstein in there if we wanted to. But that was a long day. We didn't want to do that much driving. So yeah, and it's run by these guys online, the fantastic group of blokes. I think there was 38 cars in total, wasn't there, Phil? 38
yeah, teams. I think there was originally supposed to be 50 teams, and a few of them couldn't make it, and you dropped it down to 39, if memory serves.
And that was it. And yeah, we did it over 4 days in the summer, over the summer holidays. And we had a great time. It was absolutely brilliant. We kind of did it for, it was kind of a bit of a pie in the sky idea. It was like one of those things on Facebook. Someone tags you and you're like, oh, this would be amazing. Wouldn't this be cool? And you're like, yeah, let's do it. No one ever does it. but then when COVID hit, everything got delayed and it came round again. I think there was another Facebook post came up in 2021, I think it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I said to you, Phil, oh, are we still going to do this? And you were like, yeah, sure, why not?
They'd cancelled the 2021 ones, didn't they? Postponed it all to 2022.
Mm. Yeah, so there were two rallies. So originally, there's normally only one original route a year. They do several other rallies as well. They do, we'll go into it in a bit, but they do lots of other rallies around the Europe and the UK. And it worked out quite well that this one was going to be in 2022, which was also Phil's 40th. So we said, let's do it. Let's do it for the 40th. Like, yep. You know, I'm sure everyone can understand here that pandemic was hard. It was difficult. We lost people, you know, Phil's wife, her brother, unfortunately died of cancer. My wife's best friend died of cancer. And there were so many things that you were like, let's do it now. You know, why delay? Why say we're going to do it and then never? Let's just go for it. Mm. So we did, you know, and we had a fantastic time.
Yeah. It was
brilliant. Yeah.
So you'd already been looking for something in that vein to do for the 40th, and then it just sort of transpired that everything happened around it?
No, not really. We just kind of, when the dates came along, we're like, well, actually, we could tie it in for this. Mm-hmm. And just do it. Say, you know, parents don't approve, then, well, sorry, my 40th, I'm only 40 once. See ya. Because mine were a bit vocal, but I'm not sure about this. It's a lot of money. It's obviously, you're away for 4 days. I'm like, nah, it'd be fine. And it's a once in a lifetime, even though we now want to do it again.
Nice.
I think that's it, yeah. And I think that was originally one of the concerns was, oh, it's going to be a lot of money. Like 567 quid for a banger isn't that bad. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people kind of said, oh, it's like the Cannonball Run, you know, where they do it in their super Lamborghinis and Ferraris and all that and blast across Europe, spray mud in all the peasants' faces. But it wasn't like that for us. It was...
And now here they are, the most daredevil group of daddy drivers to ever whirl their wheels in the wacky races, competing for the title of the world's wackiest racer. The cars are approaching the starting line. First is the Turbo Terrific, driven by Peter Perfect. Next, Rufus Rupcut and Sawtooth in the Buzz Wagon. Maneuvering for position is the Army Surplus Special. Right behind is the Ant Hill Mob in their bulletproof bomb. And there's ingenious inventor, Pat Hendig, in his converter car. Oh, and here's the lovely Penelope Pitstop, the glamour gal of the gas pedal. Next, we have the Bouldermobile with the Slag Brothers, Rock and Gravel. Lurching along is the Creepy Coupe with the Gruesome Twosome. And right on their tail is the Red Mac. And there's the Arkansas Chugabug with Luke and Blubber Bear. Sneaking along last is that mean machine with those double-dealing do-batters, Dick Dastardly and his sidekick, Muttley. And even now, they're up to some dirty trick, and they're off to a standing start. And why not? They've been chained to a post by Shifty Dick Dastardly, who shifts into the wrong gear. And away they go on the way out wacky races.
The entry fee was £250 for a team of two. So again, that wasn't too bad. And then with hotels, you were left to your own devices. So they said, right, we're going to start here. We're going to end here. You get your own hotel. You can camp. You can sleep in the car. You can go to the Ritz. It's completely up to you. And I think we managed to keep the budget down quite a bit by just having budget hotels every night. You know, it was somewhere to sleep, and you didn't really worry about it too much.
I thought you were going to say you were camping in the Ritz. You turn up in the lobby.
In the car park.
Set the pole up.
Yeah, that's it. Squirrel away in the lobby somewhere.
You've already answered the last question I was going to ask is, how exactly did you convince your wives to get away with 4 days in Europe to yourselves?
Wow.
That's the trick, that one.
That was, yeah.
Teach us the wise ones.
I think they were fairly up for it. And what made it easier was, I'll go through the cities in a bit, but it finished in Nice. So that was the final finishing place. So on the last day, we went from Lake Como and we drove down to the south of France. We went through Monaco and then we finished in Nice on the last day. So I said to Louise and Emily, our wives, why don't you girls fly out to Nice and meet us in Nice at the end? And then we can have a few days in Nice. Me and Phil could drive the car back home and you girls can fly home.
So that was if the car made it to that point.
Well, yeah, that was it.
That was also the big question mark.
Yeah, because I think the thing with the rally as well is that, you know, people bought a budget banger, and the idea was that when you get to Nice, the team that run the rally then help you scrap that car. because most of the cars are on their last legs. So they scrap the car for you and then they just fly home. So it's perfect. But our car was in such good condition, we decided to keep it.
Yep.
And that was tough. The home trip was hard, I think, wasn't it?
It was
1,200 kilometers in one go. So it was a long way. I'm sure there's nothing to Sean in Canada there, you know. I'd do that in a day.
That went to the nearest Starbucks.
1,200 kilometers is still pretty long.
Yeah. So that was tough. I think we left Nice at 11 a.m. in the morning, and we got to the Channel Tunnel at 1 in the following morning. Mm. So we just drove We stopped for like food and lunch, but we just tagged the drive in and just cracked on. So
easy. Yeah. Well, before I forget, I'm just going to make it seem like it was their idea is the answer to that question. Okay, fair enough. Yes. Oh, you get a holiday in Nice. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you girls have a nice time in Nice exactly. drinking, yeah. and we'll meet you there.
We'll save money by driving down in a car. You don't have to do that. It's fine.
We sweetened the deal. We said, look, you can meet us in Monaco. You know, we'll meet up for lunch in Monaco and then go back to Nice together. That worked really well. So.
Yeah, they like Monaco.
It was beautiful. But yeah, it was good. I mean, Phil heard about it originally, didn't you, Phil?
Yes. That's when I was managing Mr. Clutch and Gravesend. And we had one from, I want to say it was 2019, maybe before that. And we had a Honda Accord pulled in and it was covered in like fake rust and stickers. And like it was set up like a Mad Max car. I was like, what the hell is this pulling in? And it turns out they'd gone from, I think, Cambridge and got as far as Gravesend, and the engine management light had come on. So I plugged it in. It was nothing serious. Cleared it all down and sent them on their way. But they had an Instagram page, so I started following them on Instagram. I was like, oh, this looks really good. And that's when I sent it to Dave, going, we should do this. And the rest is history on that one.
So next year, when one of you's off the back of the car playing like guitar and it's a flamethrower, then we'll know that you're copying that idea. Okay.
We'll go for the Mad Max car.
That's it, yeah.
So the process to apply was just literally just go through the website page. There's not like a formal application. You don't have to go through like interviews with them and say, you know, you've got this car, you've got to go through it. You just literally just apply for it and they let you in.
Yeah, I think it's first come, first served, isn't it? Nice. Until they've filled up the allocation.
Yeah, that's it. I think at the moment, we're still quite lucky. It's still not massively well-known or not massively popular, maybe. They're getting a lot of people on their tours. But, yeah, we managed to get a spot fairly easy. Their tours do sell out now, so you do have to be quick to a certain extent. But, yeah, you can apply. I was a little bit nervous, you know, that we had to do it for charity because I'm not very good at fundraising. I always feel like it's such a pressure to ask people for more money. But that's not a thing. You can do it for fundraising or you can just do it for a laugh. They have changed the rules slightly now, whereas, well, if you want to enter your own car, you can. You just get less points towards.
Yeah, you get deducted points from the start.
Yeah, that's it. So, yeah. So it's sort of like a competition. So, but yeah, it was good. Yeah.
So how do you get points? And you say so. Obviously, the person with the most points, I assume, wins. But yeah. how do you get these points then?
They set daily challenges and the challenge for the whole event. And so yes, as many of those as you can do a day, or throughout the whole thing, and every day it adds up, and whoever gets the most at the end wins.
So what would be a typical daily challenge then?
Well, one of them we struggled with that was a weekly challenge was get a picture of our own car, but a foreign version.
Oh.
And we could not find a coupe anywhere.
So what was your car?
A Hyundai coupe.
So, yeah, we scoured Auto Trader for a long time, looking at different ones and things like that. And then Phil said, I've still got my Hyundai coupe in my mum and dad's garage from... It had been hit by an HGV, hadn't it? So
yeah. Lorry tried to spin me on the 25.
Oh.
It sounds terrible, but the damage wasn't that bad.
No.
It was mainly
it was enough to write the car off, but not enough to damage how it drives. So
nice.
Yeah. So that had been sat in the garage for, what do I want to say, 7 years?
About 5 years it'd been standing.
So we dug that out and went through it. It had only done 75,000 miles. So the engine was fairly engine was fairly good. We had to do a few things to it to get it back up to spec. It needed new tyres, new wheels. What else did it have done, Phil?
I had the cam belt done before I drove it anywhere. I was like, that is way overdue. Cam belt, did a full service on it. Got all the brakes freed up because they were C solid where it had been sat for so long. So we had to do the power steering pump.
Oh, yeah, the power steering pump was completely shot.
Because that was when we were still trying to see what needed doing, and I was still driving it. The power steering pump packed up one day on the way back from lightsabers, oddly enough. And it turns out the power steering pump belt also drives the cooling. So me not knowing this at the time, I was driving home thinking, I've lost the power steering, that's fine, just got to get home. And the temperature gauge was going up and up and up and up and up. And then that then cracked the radiator, so we had to put a new radiator in it as well. So that was fun and games. But once that was done, it was pretty straightforward.
And none of those fixings goes towards like the budget limit. So it's just budget for the car. And then anything you spend over that, that's down to you.
Oh, well, you had some people that were buying a budget car and then completely respraying it. Wow. And that's not cheap. That's like £1,000 to do that alone sometimes.
Yeah. There was a real mix of people, wasn't there? You're right. Some people had gone all out and spent loads of money on their setups and sprayed and wrapped their cars. And then, you know, there was some guys we met from Wales who'd bought three young lads who bought a Panda from Bristol the weekend before. And that was it. And they were just driving a Panda. And I think they bought it for £500. It had a cracked manifold. So whenever it was stood idling, the engine would go wham, wham, wham constantly. And these guys didn't buy tickets home or flights home because they didn't know where the car was going to get to. Their mechanic said to them, you could get to Dover or you could get to Nice. It's a complete unknown. So every city they got to, they were like, well, we haven't got to buy flights today. And I think because they were quite low, weren't they? Bless them. They were always the last ones to turn up. So they were always out the latest at night.
Yeah, and the last to turn up in the morning.
That's it. So every city we went to, there was a pub that they'd hired out, and every night we'd wait for them to drive past. And when they did, everyone would be like, "Way, there they are."
It was like, has anyone seen him today? No, I haven't seen him today.
Yeah. They just disappear.
They just turn up like 4 hours after everyone else got there. Yeah.
All right, lads, we've been all over places. They've been all over the shop.
They took it to Milan, didn't they, at one point?
Yeah. We drove around Milan, and in all the guides, they give you like a guide for all the cities. They said, do not go near Milan. The one-way system is terrible. You'll be stuck there for ages. And they went off to see the San Siro in Milan, didn't they? So.
Yeah, they took the Panda to Milan.
Yeah.
The most unreliable car on the route. That's okay.
Wow. Oh, God. So you mentioned that someone spray painted their cars. Now, I've watched the YouTube video, the official video for the rally itself. Now, you had an interesting choice for the design of your car. What was it, and why did you choose that design?
Well, we had a yellow car,
which just makes sense.
A few of the people actually asked, didn't they? They asked, why did you spray it yellow? And we're like, we didn't spray it yellow. That's how it came factory fitted. It was a yellow car. And was it? I think you found it, didn't you? You found it on one of the online rooms, you found a giant Pikachu face. And we thought, and you sent it to me going, let's put this on the bonnet. And I was like, that's a really good idea.
that was it. It was one of those weird Chinese sites, you know, where you buy anything and everything. AliExpress, something like that, wish.com. And it was a very badly photoshopped Lamborghini that had a Pikachu face on the front of it. It's like, make your car look like a Lamborghini with Pikachu on.
So I want to see the overlap on that algorithm. That would be great. Lamborghini drivers, you might also like Pikachu stickers.
So that was it, and we managed to find some more. So I was like, look, it's yellow like Pikachu, let's just carry on doing it. And remarkably, I think that was, I was a little bit nervous about trying to find decals for it, but the ones we found were all amazing.
I said to you, didn't I? I was like, we need to find ones of him like running or doing a dash we could put down the side. And then I'd hunted for ages, couldn't find him, and then within 30 seconds, like, oh, here they are. Ow.
I know, I'm weirdly good on finding stuff online.
So. I have to say, my eldest kid really appreciated the bumper sticker, though. The X-rated yes. Pikachu on the back.
My five-year-old loves
just
that.
Just on the back, yeah.
That was one of Dave's ones.
I don't know why.
I bought that and I was like, right, this has got to go on the car. So it was like, do you think we'll get pulled over? I was like, no, we'll be fine. So.
And you got to remember, I live outside and I have to park that car outside of school. All the kids love the Pikachu car, but I don't think the parents like the back of it. The front and the side are fine, but the back, they avoid the back.
That's it, yeah.
It's like they see you coming and they go, oh, look at this, kids, look at this, go gather around. Oh, look, there's a beautiful Pikachu car, and it drives and off. Then, and you go, oh, don't look at the back.
Look away, Yeah, basically.
He's pointing directions. He's pointing directions.
Smack bang in the middle at the back.
Yeah, he's flipping over a bird Pikachu. I don't know.
The only way is up.
Yeah. Daddy, what does that evolve into?
But it turned out to be a fantastic choice because it was so popular.
No one had done it before, I don't think, on that side of it.
That's it, yeah. And I think because Pokemon is so universal, everywhere you went, and it turns out Pikachu is the same in most languages. Wherever you went, there were kids and people and stopping and shouting, "Ah, Pikachu, Pikachu!" and like pointing at us and taking photos. And I mean, Monaco was crazy, wasn't it? When we got to Monaco, you can drive the Grand Prix circuit, and it goes right around in front of the casino. So there's all like the cars from Dubai and Qatar. They fly over.
The Bugatti Veyrons and Lamborghinis and Ferraris.
That's it, yeah. And then we pulled up in front of the casino.
And you find the one Lamborghini driver with the Pikachu sticker as well and just line up.
That's that would have been amazing.
We found our counterpart. Take a picture.
That's it. And we got so much, so many people stopping us to take photos. At that point, the girls had met us, hadn't they? And we both went separately for a drive around Monaco.
And they couldn't believe how much attention the car got.
Yeah. Like Louise was saying, it's like being a celebrity. Like everyone was stopping. They were stopping in the middle of the road to take pictures of it and stuff. So it was really enjoyable.
The funniest one for me was when we were driving down the autobahn and that Golf went flying past us and then slammed his brakes on to let us catch up again. So he could take pictures of it as he went past. Yeah.
As they almost did like an emergency stop. And
they're giving us the thumbs up for the window taking pictures.
Well, at least you think it was a thumbs up, unless you saw the back sticker.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it was great. The route was crazy, wasn't it? So it was over, like I said, it was over 4 days. We started off in, obviously, the UK and went down on the tunnel, which, Daniel, you live near us. It was only 45 minutes, so that wasn't too bad. The only downside was we got to the tunnel early. I said, let's get there early. Yeah, let's get there early. They'll stick us on an earlier train. When we got there, there was a two-hour delay. So we got there 2 hours early and there was a two-hour delay. So we sat at Folkestone for 4 hours.
4 hours.
Which was fun.
It was really hot as well that day. So we're like, leave the car. We're going in services. There's aircon in there.
And that was I didn't tell you guys, that was the one thing that didn't work on the car. Everything was fine on it, except the air conditioning.
That's the one thing I didn't get fixed.
That was the one thing that was broken, the air conditioning. And it was hot.
And the sunroof didn't work.
Oh yeah, and the sunroof was broken. So it was warm. I think there was maybe one day it went down to like 22 degrees, but most of the rest of it was like 28, 30 all the way.
Windows down on the motorway. Warm. Noisy, but cool.
Yikes. Yeah. Yeah, it was constantly like, do you want to stop here? What? What?
That's the turning. What?
Yeah.
Now, I noticed that one of you was also in a costume for some of it. How much time did you have to spend in the suit?
A lot on the first night. But yeah, that was because we hadn't even taken that out of the packaging until we got to the hotel room, did we?
No.
And we were so late for registration. We just kind of threw it on, put batches in it, hit the inflate button, And then I basically got stuck in the hotel room and I couldn't get out. So to kind of wiggle past the beds, out the door, into the lift, giggling away.
And the suit was... Yeah.
We bought, I'd found at like 3 a.m. again on some random Chinese website, an inflatable Pikachu outfit. So I think it was 2 meters tall, it said it was. And I was like, yeah, this is perfect. Like, if it was a bit of a gamble, because I was like, if the pictures are as good as it looks, it will be amazing. But again, it was coming all the way from China on a ferry. So I was like, oh, there's a chance here it could be awful. I mean, we've all seen the things you order from China and they're not what they are. But we got it out and it was superb. It was absolutely
fantastic.
We were in a very budget hotel for the first night. As we went down in the lift, someone tried to get in, didn't they? But the lift doors opened and they just went, oh, no. Matt had something in French.
And John, the doors closed. And squeezed in the lift.
As the doors slowly closed, just on the that was a Pikachu, sad Pikachu face.
Yeah, and we had that because the first night, so we went to Saint-Omer for the first night, that's where we started. Everyone meets up for registration and it's fancy dress. Yes. So you all have to come in fancy dress. And we were quite late, so we waddled, well, Phil waddled through the square in it. And we didn't realise as we got to the pub, they were doing the fancy dress competition.
They were announcing the winners.
And it was biggest cheer won. And as they got to, there was two teams up for first club, first prize. And as they said, oh, well, we're going to have a cheer for first prize. And as they did that, Phil and me walked around the corner.
And he's in the Pikachu onesie went, and I'm in the Pikachu outfit.
And everyone, the entire pub just erupted. So the organisers went, well, we got to give it to them. They got the biggest cheer. So
I'm in this giant outfit. I can't hear a thing really going on. So all I can hear is the pump circulating the air in. And I was like, did we just win the concert, the fancy dress? He's like, yeah, we did. We haven't done anything. We've just walked in. Like, oh, no.
100 points and 50 euros.
I've got images of them handing you the trophy and it's just slipping through your inflatable hands. Just, you can't pick it up.
It'll be like airplane. The inflatable thing will be behind him and he'll be at the bottom.
Yeah, well, Dave's got the outfit now, so I don't quite know what goes on.
I think it's upstairs, actually. Yeah.
I was looking for it on the boot, and I was like, did Dave take it? I was like, oh, we left it somewhere. No, I was like, no, Dave must have taken it.
I did, yeah. It was a very warm night for Phil. And,
yes, but I think after we could pass beers through it, and I could sit there and drink beers.
A drunk Pikachu, very good.
We had to do like pit stops. You had to quickly unzip it. He'd give me the empty glass, and I'd pass another one through, and then zip him back up again.
So. Give him a beer quick before he goes down on you. What do you mean?
Basically, yeah. Oh.
But yeah, I think once the other teams who were vying for first place had calmed down, because
yeah, they weren't happy.
Some of them weren't very happy with us that we'd rocked up and stolen first place. So once they calmed down, it was a really nice night, and Phil was like a celebrity. I mean, the amount of people, the amount of French people that wanted their picture taken with him was insane. So.
Yeah,
very popular.
It's like being at Comic Con. It's like concert. Yeah, all right.
And that would be perfect for Comic Con because you're completely sealed in, you know, regardless of COVID protections or anything like that, you're straight in. Be great.
I think we should do it.
Just don't bump
it's a whole new world. Yeah. Sumo. There we go.
It's huge.
So you were Team Yellow, so I'm guessing because of the yellow car.
Yeah.
Yes.
What were some of the other teams? So what other cars were a part of the rally?
Well, the overall winners were the Dyslexic Pirates in their Previa. And to be fair, the main reason they won is one of the challenges was how many people can you fit in your car? And because they had a giant Previa, they got 22 people in the car. And I think it was 10 points per person.
Wow.
Yeah, so they opened up a big league. Yeah, so that, yeah, there was those guys. We had the Welsh guys in the Panda, We kept running into the zombie nurses.
The zombie nurses, they were all, yeah, we've got...
Oh, yeah. You kept running.
Well, okay, you know. Yeah.
They were blokes.
Yeah. We get too excited.
No.
They were appearing, yeah.
What happens in Monaco stays in Monaco, yeah.
Yeah. That's it, yeah. Yeah, they
helped them with their fluffy dice.
Yeah. There were some guys, I can't remember their team name, but the guys who won overall best decorated banger had a Peugeot 307 decorated in wallpaper. So they got some 70s psychedelic wallpaper and wallpapered the car and put like carpet on their wheel trims.
They drilled a hole in the dashboard and put a lava lamp in the dashboard as well.
Yeah.
That was good.
Was good, yeah, and I think they were doing okay until we were coming down the it rained on the last day and they lost a lot of their wallpaper.
Yeah, just started peeing off down the motorway,
and they had like shagpile carpets over their wheel trims, didn't they?
Yes,
and coming down the mountains in Italy, their brakes overheated quite a bit. They had to stop a lot more than anyone else because they said no cooling for their brakes. Yeah, I mean, everyone really went all out, didn't they, and decorated their cars.
Well, you had the Aston Martin, which was not a £500 car, and they literally just a sticker on the side of it. That was it. That was all they'd done with that one.
That's it, yeah. And when he turned up in his Aston Martin, we were like, look at him in his Aston Martin, what a knob.
It sounded nice. We got some good videos.
Yeah, and he was actually a really nice guy, wasn't he? Like, we became really good mates by the end of it. So.
Yeah, and there were two other Hyundai coupes, weren't there?
Which was remarkable, yeah. Two exactly the same as ours. Loaded. I mean, there was a real eclectic mix, wasn't there, of cars.
Lots of
Saabs. Quite a lot of Peugeots, a lot of Saabs, which I think made a rally record, because there were three Saabs that got to the end of the rally.
And none of them had any mechanical issues, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. The first time they've
ever. That's the first time ever a Saab's got to the end.
And I think one of them was an automatic 900 that had done like 200,000 miles. It made it with no issues.
Well, I suppose if you're up against the travelling wallpaper car, I think you're going to do better than that, aren't you, really?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, my God. So you've done this adventure. You went on this this crazy jaunt through Europe. You took some real kit with you as well, like the cameras and stuff like that. Was that expected of you? Are you supposed to record yourselves doing these challenges, or is that something you wanted to do? You wanted to detail what you did?
To a certain point, the photos, you kind of had to take proof of things you were doing. So what were some of the challenges? Oh, take a picture of your car with another one the same from that country. Yeah. You had to take photos at certain points. Like, you had to take a photo with a rocket on the first day.
Yeah. So every day we had different challenges. So you didn't have to take photos or videos of the car when you were doing it, but Phil had that i360 camera you may be referring to.
Yes.
Love that
we wanted something like that, you know, to kind of get the GoPro
shots. I sold quite a few action figures to buy that camera.
Yeah, that one's good. It was a nice surprise because I was kind of looking for one, and then Phil out of the blue was like, I've got one. And you had the
don't
car
worry,
mounts.
I've sorted it.
And everything. So there's a video on YouTube that Phil's put on, and it's the mount we had makes it look like a computer game. So it looks like, you know, you're driving the car sort of thing. So we took quite a few shots of that. But yeah, you didn't have to do that sort of stuff. The challenges that we had, as Phil said, we had daily ones and then ones throughout the whole weekend. So the first day was a bit of a scavenger hunt because the first day wasn't the longest in driving, but we went across the most amount of countries. So we went from France to Belgium to Luxembourg to Germany. And we had to get things like Belgian gin, some snails in France. There was one that said, take a picture of your car with a space rocket.
Yes.
That's a weird challenge, but it must be specific.
Yeah, that was day one. I've got the challenge sheets here still.
Yeah. And we drove past, one of the routes you took went past the European Space Center.
Oh.
So as you drove down the motorway, there was all the rockets in the car park.
And nice.
As we drove past, we could see everyone from the rally pulling up and taking pictures. So
we're probably the only ones that didn't get in trouble, because a lot of the others kept pulling up on the grass. and putting props on the rockets, and the museum people didn't like that. Whereas we just pulled up in front of it, had the Pikachu sound effects playing from the front of the car, and just took a picture and then ran away.
Yeah. The pirates got in trouble for backing their Previa into one of the space rockets.
And putting Kermit the Frog on top of it.
Yeah, they were not happy about that. Surprisingly stern Belgian security guards.
I was going to say, how easy was it for you to move from country to country? Were they sort of like, what the hell is happening here?
it was easy, okay, to be fair. Yeah, we didn't see that many police. From Belgium, we went on to Luxembourg and finished in Stuttgart on the first night, didn't we?
Yeah.
And that was fairly uneventful. I think the one they advised us about was Monaco.
Don't mess with the Monaco police.
Yeah, they said they've got to be a bit careful in Monaco because they don't take any rubbish. Like, you've got to be careful because they'll just fine you and kick you out of the city straight away. But other than that, one of our challenges weekly challenges, was to get a picture next to a policeman, or for bonus points, get a picture of the copper in your car. Which a few people managed to do. And we were driving south from Lake Como on the last day, and we went round a roundabout, didn't we? And I went, look, there's some police there. They're just standing there. Should we go and talk to them?
Yep.
And you're like, okay. So we pulled in and then realised they were quite heavily armed police.
Yes, they were. who didn't like the Pikachu car very much.
No. We bottomed out on the roundabout as well, which made them quite suspicious, made a big bang.
Is there something wrong with your car? Is it broken? I'm like, no, it's fine.
Yeah, quite low. We were trying to explain to them in bad Italian and terrible English. We wanted them to get in the car, and one of them stood behind us with an MP5, didn't he? Keeping an eye on us.
Yes, I looked in the rearview mirror, and I was like, that's a big gun.
Yeah. While the other two questioned what we were up to, we were like, do you want to sit in the car? Yeah. See? And they were like, no. And they just sent us on our way. We're like, right, well, we won't do that challenge then.
No, so. We'll skip that one.
But other than that, I think we're okay.
I wondered if they've been sent like this thing. Oh, there's this group of cars. They're messing around with rockets in the European Space Agency. They're traveling around. They're trying to bundle their police into their car. You know, don't trust them. They've got some inflatable thing in the boot. No, don't trust it whatsoever. They're hanging around with some nurses. I don't know.
Which fair. On that day, it could have even been that they'd had a report of two dodgy guys in one of the car dealerships trying to take pictures. That was just after we'd managed to find another banger the same as ours, but it was in a secondhand dealership, and they parked it in the far corner, and there were so many cars between them, it was untrue. So we got the 360 camera on about a 6-meter pole and held it up in the air and then basically got a picture from so high up that you could get both cars in one shot. There's Dave in the car park, this pole going, it's getting really heavy. Hurry up, take the picture.
Yeah, just take the photo.
And I'm like, it's so far away, the camera couldn't connect on my phone. It's like, it's too far away, the camera's too far away from the phone.
So providing you're not now on 3 or 5 wanted lists, would you do it again, this exact one, or do you want to try something different?
I'd happily do that one again, but there's so many others as well I want to try.
Yeah. I think we got the bug for it bad when we got back. You know, the places we went and saw that you wouldn't normally see.
Yeah.
It was great. You know, like people were saying, oh, it's a long way to drive. And I think the longest day was the second day, which was probably my fault, actually. I messed up.
That was terrifying.
Oh, dear. But I think we would do it again, definitely. But yeah. I can tell you guys about the second day. So like the second day we went from Stuttgart to Innsbruck, and they were saying the night before, they said, right, the challenge is much easier on the second day. It wasn't like a scavenger hunt. We had to keep stopping all the time. It's in the cars. So you can just crack on and go. And it was a great game to play, which I now play with my kids. It was Car Alphabet.
Yeah.
But you had to do it with the make or model of the car. So you couldn't do it with a number plate.
And you had to do it in order as well. Mm-hmm. You couldn't skip any.
That's it. So you have to do A for Audi, B for BMW, you know, C for a Corsa. And you could skip them if you couldn't find any letters, but you couldn't go back. So you had to
take photos of every single one you did, so they'd go through the camera timeline.
So you had to choose whether you were going to stick or try and go on to the next one. And that was good, but it was a long day driving on the second day. And I think partly probably my fault, because I didn't realise. So when you get to Austria, you have to get an Austrian vignette, which is essentially a little pass that gives you lets you go on toll roads. Now, the day before in France, I'd turned off on Google Maps the option that said, I turned it on, that said avoid tolls, because it kept trying to take us on the toll roads. So when we got to Austria, it kept trying to take us back up into Germany to Munich and then back down into Innsbruck. And I was like, why is it doing that? It's being so stupid. So I plotted a route that went through the mountains, but it went through all the ski resorts.
Which look amazing, but the roads are terrifying.
Oh my God.
Driving up the cliff faces, like, oh my God, we're going to die.
Yeah, yeah. They were like, you know, the roads just kept going and going and going and going. And I think at one point we passed through places like Lech, which is like a really famous Austrian ski resort. But I'm pretty sure Lech is something like 8,000 feet up or something. I think it's 1,400 meters or something like that. So the roads, and because you're in a left-hand, is it left-hand drive car?
Right-hand drive car.
Sorry. The driver, nine times out of 10, is just looking down an abyss because you're on the other side of the road. So that was terrifying.
Yeah, because you were driving that way, weren't you?
Yeah, we went all the way up and then all the way back down. On the way down, I said to Phil, I was like, what's that smell? Something's really starting to smell. And Phil went, that's the brakes.
Don't worry. Cooking. It's like, fine.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and it turned out that when we finally got to Innsbruck, I'd had the avoid toll road thing on. So everybody else had gone down the motorway and got there 3 hours before us. We had taken the long route.
But we had some nice pictures.
I mean, yeah, it was impressive scenery. But we drove, that was the longest day. I think we were driving for like 8 hours that day.
Yeah.
And that was a long day. So. The other ones weren't too bad after that. But Innsbruck was beautiful. We absolutely loved it.
Yeah, lovely place. I'd happily go back there again.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other rallies they do. So they do the one they did after we finished was they did another one that summer, which was France to Romania. And again, if you want to keep your car back again, but I said, Phil, I'm not doing that one with a car that we keep. I'm not driving all the way to Romania and then back again. You know,
yeah.
That's far too much. They've just done one round Scotland, haven't they?
Yeah, that looked good. I think that might be the next one. We have to try and do that one, I think.
Yeah. So I don't know if you guys were aware of that road that goes around Scotland. I think it's like the TBR 700 or 500. And it basically, several years back, the Scottish government, in an effort to get more tourists up there, published this road. And it basically goes all around the edge of Scotland. So it goes all the way up to the north and back round the coast. And they do that one over 4 days, which they've just done, which looks amazing, nice. Which we might try and do. And they do London to Lisbon, but you have to have a KA.
Yeah, start to Brands Hatch that one.
Yeah, yeah, there we go. Oh. Segwaying into Paul in a bit.
So you do a lap of Brands Hatch, then off you go.
That's it. they do a lot, I think. I don't know if I'd do, I would maybe do this one again, but
Beach Routes one to Barcelona was the week before our one.
Hmm. Yes, that's fairly similar. So again, they go through France, Germany, across the Alps, over the Pyrenees, and finish in Barcelona. So I think, yeah, we definitely do them again in Europe, I think. I think the only change we would definitely do...
Get the aircon working.
Yeah.
Number one, yeah.
Number one, get the aircon working. I think I would like to buy a car. I've been looking at rally cars to buy as well, so we can do it in a team.
Two teams.
Yeah. And I think we wouldn't do the trip home in one city because that was tough. I think what we did is when we got to Nice and the girls met us there, we had a few days in Nice to rest and recover. It was my birthday while we were out there. And then we drove home. Then I think what we do is have maybe one night in Nice, drive a couple of hours, stop, have a night there, drive another couple of hours, stop, like that, rather than doing it in one big thing. So it's too much. It was too much. So. But yeah, definitely. I would recommend it to anyone. I think, you know, Google it, have a look on there. They were on Facebook, they're on Instagram, Tubal Rally. It was it's affordable, and it was such good fun. Yeah. Like, we met and so many people. The team that run it are absolutely fantastic. Ian, isn't it, the main guy who runs it? And it was yeah, really, really good. Could not endorse it enough.
No. You know what else we can endorse? This promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network.
I knew he'd do it at some point.
Perfection.
Love it.
Take the victory slurp there and pops it back down.
Yeah.
Well, I gotta say something.
Mic drop.
That's why he earns the big bucks.
I wait for them, Sean. When I'm on the train listening to you guys, I wait for them. I'm like, oh.
They become a huge part of the show. It's weird.
Modern Musicology is a podcast covering topics on rock and pop, ranging mostly from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, with occasional excursions into the 60s and aughts, and even occasionally the 2010s. Anything is fair game. Classic rock, R&B, folk, punk, prog, rap, metal, and way more, with two Americans, one Brit, a ton of fun, and a healthy dose of cynicism.
No, my wife's cousin did a similar rally, but his exactly the same idea: buy a cheap car, drive it to somewhere, and then ditch it and scrap it and fly home. And but he went from he lives in Bristol, but he went. I don't know whether it started in Bristol or whether he started it in London. I have a feeling he probably started it in London. But he went through a number of different places when you could, basically, sort of, you know, Belgium, Austria. Croatia, I think, maybe Serbia, Bulgaria, into Turkey. Then the idea was to get, when they got to Turkey, they couldn't go through. So they had to get a ferry across the Black Sea to try and get to Georgia, which is where they were ending, and then Azerbaijan. And I think the idea was, again, across the Caspian Sea into somewhere like Uzbekistan. It was a hell of a thing. And when they were going through, obviously, a lot of the Russian states, which at the time you could, you are literally driving in the middle of a desert with nothing there other than old cars that have never quite made it across. And with, you know, stopping every now and again at service stations, which obviously, like, just basically a guy with a, you know, petrol can filling you up, and then being followed out of there by some guys who are very interested in your car.
Yeah.
So, with guns and things. And so, how on earth they survived it, I don't know. They were going to make like a TV program out of it. They were going to try and get a bit of video together and make some sort of, it probably ended up on YouTube, to be honest. But that's the way they went across that way. And that's not the way I would go. I'd much rather do yours.
Because that's safer.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be fantastic.
Guaranteed there'd be a guy just in the middle of nowhere who actually recognises Pikachu and still wants to
play. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. You drive up to a car and there's your equivalent car.
It's the Chinese Lamborghini coming from the other side.
They're on a rally as well.
Well, thank you so much, guys. That was fantastic. Like, I cannot wait to see the next journey you go on. And are you going to sort of make this a regular thing on the YouTube? Because I know, Dave, you posted your video. Phil, you've got your video. Are you going to sort of do this on the regular and then make it like a regular thing you're going to post up and just do it all the time?
I'd like to keep the Coops Instagram going. Kind of run out of content for that in a minute.
I think so. Yeah. I think we would. I was... Phil's uploaded the kind of raw video of us driving up the Stelvio Pass, which was the big thing in this rally, which was, it's like 69 switchbacks up and over this mountain, which was fantastic. And we took quite a lot of footage of other people driving past, didn't we? And we thought, everyone will be doing that. But no one seemed to take any pictures of us, sadly, did they?
Yeah, it's like none of us driving past people.
Yeah, which was sad. In fact, I think the only video... or one of the only videos that the organisers got is they got to the top of the Stelvio Pass first and then were videoing everybody coming in. And I drove up it and Phil drove down, and I'd done 69 switchbacks all the way up. Really difficult. You had to get your partner to tell you if you could go round the hairpin.
Yeah, because you can't see what's coming down the other way.
I couldn't see anything. They were so steep, I could see the sunroof. That was it. And then we got to the very top and the organisers were like, hooray, you've made it. And as I went to pull away, I stalled it. in front of everyone. I stopped the car and rolled back several feet. And the disappointment on all their faces was, I'll never let that down. I was like, oh no. So I think we will definitely try and carry it on, try and do some more. I think we're going to book onto the Scottish one and do that, whether it's the two cars or just one. But we will definitely keep it going.
Maybe we should find out if there's one in Canada. Maybe, you know, figure out a way of getting over there, get you over there. So see if there's a rally, a Canadian rally of some sort. I don't know.
I'd love to try that. That would be amazing.
You'd have to.
There must be something.
Oh, there's definitely, you know, a little town in the middle of nowhere. What's it called, Sean? Is it Timmins?
Yes, actually. Yes. The land that culture forgot. I don't think they have that kind of stuff there.
Maybe that's, you could be the one to start it, and then it's all the way up to Sault Ste. Marie from Timmins, and that will be the rally. Enough. It's probably about the same distance geographically as what you guys travel.
That's right. If you do the same distance that Dave and Phil did, you only end up halfway across Canada.
Not even close.
I think in total, with all the driving we did there and back, it was almost 2,000 miles, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's 2,000 miles.
So it was a long way. Oh yeah, a
week.
Can you do that, Sean? Can you drive across Canada like the complete? Is there a way to get all the way across it? Or do you have to duck into the States?
We've got the Trans-Canada Highway. You can go from one end of the country to the other.
Wow. That'd be amazing. Do it, Phil. Let's get it on a ferry. Let's go.
Yeah.
That'd be a long right, yellow Pikachu. Over there.
Yeah. We'll wave as we go past.
Yeah. You'll hear it because it does talk.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. Yeah. So you installed that as a separate system or did you find it special?
I looked up outdoor speakers, and I found some that are actually meant to be for boats. So I stripped down the wheel arches, and I basically drilled some holes and screwed them into the panels behind the wheel arches, put the arch liners back in, fed the cables through into the dashboard, so you can plug it into an MP3 player or to your phone and just fill it with Pikachu sound effects, so that just plays Pikachu sound effects and the music from the outside of the car.
I thought you were going to say because it came for boats, all you could hear was.
Just so they're waterproof. Obviously, in the wheel arch, but
of course, it's a bit wet. Yes. Yeah, it's going to splash up.
That's it. It was good. We had some good sound effects. We had the "Who's that Pokemon?"
We wanted that every time we started the car. We wish it would do that.
It was good.
That's so cool. Well, thank you so much for being our guests on this episode, because that's brilliant. I can't imagine ever doing something like that. First, I've got to learn
we'll
to drive.
We'll take you next time. You can navigate. You'll be better than me.
Yeah, just sit back with the map. It'd be fine. I could do nothing else. Just sit there. I'll be the Pokeball. I'll just sit in the enclosure and that'd be it. But you're not the only guys who have gone a bit car crazy this year. We've also got Paul. You had a little adventure as well.
Yes. Last week, my company decided that we needed to take out a customer on a jolly. And somehow my name was roped into it. I thought, okay, well, you know, I deal with this customer quite a lot. So, yeah, okay, that's fine. Everybody knew me. So I'm sort of like a low-down grunt. So I don't normally get to do these things. You know, it's always the managers that are playing golf in Portugal or at Glen Eagles or something like that. I got invited out to this, and it was a driving experience down in Brands Hatch, which is a race circuit just south east-ish of London in Kent, my favourite track in the UK, which I've been down to a couple of times. And basically we arrived there. There was originally there was 18 in our group. That's 10 of our company and 6 of the customer, and a couple of hangers-on from the actual company who had organised all of this. But they were told to go into another group to even things out. So there were 16 in each group. There was 4 groups. So that's 64 people in total that had turned up. So we had different activities through the day. That was obviously rotated between all of these groups. In our 16, the first thing we did was a go-kart race around the small little go-kart track there in Brands Hatch, which is very poor because it's only about 200 yards long and it's got 2 corners and that's about it. But anyway, that doesn't stop you from trying to race these things around the track. And there was one lady there from our customer who was absolutely wicked. She'd never done anything like this before. I was watching her. I went a little bit around the track to sort of watch her, how she cornered and where she was accelerating and braking and all that. And I thought, that's amazing. I just hope I don't go up against her in the race because she looks phenomenal. And she was only the same height as me, but about 5'4", quite slim. So obviously, lightweight in a go-kart, really good. So anyway, the organisers, it was absolute chaos. We all got in for our practice laps, which we did. Then we supposedly we did some races to see who would qualify where. Then we went into theoretically a semi-final and a final. I don't know what happened. I don't know where we were. I just got in the car and drove it as fast as I could, tried to overtake as many people as I could and stay in the front because we didn't know whether we were in a heat, a practice session. They were adding up points to say where you came. I don't know how they worked that out because they didn't have any sort of electronic timing. I think they were just getting everybody to stop at the finish line and work out where they were from there. The guy couldn't add up points, so he was just making it all up in his head. To the point where we got to what turned out to be, I think, the final, and I thought, I hadn't made it because they were calling out the names and the people going in, and I looked up and there was one of my colleagues is 6'4" and 20 stone. Whatever that is in kilos, over 100 kilos, I assume. And so when he was in the go-kart, he just puts his foot down to accelerate and nothing was happening. He was crawled off the line where everybody else overtook him. He was on the front of the front row. And I thought, well, if he's in the front row, I'm obviously not in this race because if this is a semi-final, then I must be in the next one or something. And anyway, next bit, there's a lot of confusion and shouting going on. And next bit, Paul, you're on. So I ran over and I'm in pole position. I thought, well, okay, I don't even know whether this is the semi-final. Just keep going. I've got to be in the top two to finish, whatever, to progress to what might be the final. I don't know what it was. I jumped in, I looked to the left, and there's this gentleman, large gentleman. I thought, well, that's easy. I've got him off the line, no problem. I looked behind me and there was another one of my colleagues who was pretty quick. If he was in front of me, I might struggle to get past him. But I'm in front of him, so that's okay. And then I look over to my left, and there's this lady that was absolutely wicked. And I thought, oh dear, this isn't going to go well. So off we go. I get into the first corner. I'm first, no problem, because the big guy's too slow. He's holding up everybody else. I come out of the first corner, and right behind me is this girl. I went, oh no, she's right behind me. So I managed to keep her behind me for a few laps. And then I made a mistake and went a bit wide. She gets down the inside of me and off we go. And I caught up with her again, made another little mistake and dropped back and then caught her again. But I just couldn't get the timing right to overtake her. And eventually she won that race. We assume it was the final because we all got out of the cars. They said, well done. We're now moving on to something else. Right. Okay. Fine. Whatever. But that was a good way to warm things up. We all had a good laugh at it. One lady crashed the go-kart, and of course, as soon as you crash the go-kart, that's it. Instantly, you're out of the go-karting. You can't take any further part. Another one tried to run over the guy waving the checkered flag, which he was not amused about, and that's the reason why she didn't get into the final, but the big guy did. So that was quite funny.
Attempted murder's not looked kindly on.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't help your cause. So then we moved on to our second challenge, which was driving a Caterham, which is a two-seater sports car, engine in the front, rear wheels right under your backside. And you had to basically drive it around a course of traffic cones. So you had to do a slalom to start off with, and then you did a horseshoe bend coming around, back on yourself, through a chicane, and then you came up to two cones, which were placed about 100 yards in front of you. And you had to get to the cone and then do a donut around the cone. So spin the back wheels, let the back wheels come out, spin the car around, and then go over to the next cone, do the same thing again. And then you drive off into a box, which you then have to stop the car in the box. And it's a timed session, so you have to do it as quick as you can. So we were all having great fun doing this. It was as soon as you put your foot on the accelerator, the wheels were spinning. I mean, it was just, there was, all the power just went through the rear wheels. So, of course, trying to get through the cones is quite a challenge because you don't want to go too fast because it's going to spin the wheels or you're just going to understeer and you can't get anywhere. So take it easy through there. And then as soon as you accelerate out of the cones, the back end comes round and you go, oh God, you're opposite lock, and it's all going horribly wrong. So you have to sort of tootle round a bit and then come to the cones where you do the donuts. And I thought, I tried to play this a bit crafty, because playing a lot of computer games, racing computer games, I've got my own steering wheel and pedals, of course. So I always use my left foot to brake. Not in the real car, obviously, otherwise you tend to throw yourself through the windscreen. So I thought, well, I'm going to left foot brake here. So I've got my foot ready, and we turn into the first cone. And the idea is you turn viciously, you brake, so you stick the car on its nose. As soon as it's got a bit of grip, you hit the accelerator and it spins the back end round and you do your donut. I come up to the cone, hit the brake, accelerate. I'm thinking, why the hell's the engine making a hell of a lot of noise? And I'm not slowing down. And I'm turning the wheel, and the car's just going wider and wider and wider. And suddenly I'm heading towards all these people who are looking rather panicky. I realize that I'm not touching the brake, I'm touching the clutch. And this thing is just rolling away into the crowd. So I slammed on the brake quickly, got it back in again, and did a few things. We did that a couple of times. And the girl who crashed the go-kart, she did her bit, came round. She totally drove straight through the box. She didn't even stop in the box. So she turned round and then drove it back into the box again. By which time the guys are saying, no, come over, it's fine. So she drives the car right up to the start line, straight into the back of the next car that's waiting to go onto the road, damaging the front of the car. So, that was not good. The girl who had tried to drive over the checkered flag man in the previous go-kart, she started off by going rocketing off like you wouldn't believe. Everyone went, oh, my God, that's amazing. Look at the speed she's doing. And she went straight past all of the cones, didn't bother doing the slalom, got to the end, realized she hadn't done it, and then just spun the car anyway and then drove off. One of my colleagues thought he's one of these speed demons. He rides a motorbike and keeps saying, he's done 180 odd mile an hour on the motorway and all this. He's really into it. Okay, so he gets in it, woof, he's off, and he's through the chicane, through the cones like you wouldn't believe. It's absolutely amazing the speed he was taking through there. He comes out of the cones, puts his foot down, and just does a donut. So he then says, well, okay, I've messed that up then. So he just goes around randomly just doing donuts and spinning the car everywhere, because why not? You don't get to do this every day. So then we move on to the next challenge, which was Land Rover Defender. Four-wheel drive, and the idea is you take this car and you take it through all the mud and the puddles and the up the hills, down the hills, around this little course they've set out. You get halfway around and then they time you to go from A to B, and you've got to do it in 60 seconds. And if you're over 60 seconds, that's tough. That's the time you've done. If you're under 60 seconds, however far under you are, they will take that time and add it to the 60 seconds. So if you do it in 55 seconds, they will add that 5 seconds that you've done it too quick and add it to the 60 seconds to give you 105. The time you have to do it in is 60 seconds. So off we go, and we drive around, and there's cars going the wrong way. The girl who tried to drive over this flagman, she's gone the wrong way. She's off down somewhere else, basically because she was turning left. And the guy said, no, turn right. She goes, I am turning right. He says, no, you're not, you're turning left. She says, which way is left? <You're> like, what? I might just point out that this girl has only had a license for 11 months.
Has surprised one, she's got one.
Has written one car off and crashed another. So, yes, I'm still surprised. She's still got a license or insurance. Anyway, we do this, and it was great. That was great fun. I mean, putting a Land Rover, vertical and then straight down. You basically the idea is that you put it into a low range gear, stick it into second gear, and then take your foot off the clutch, and the car drives away by itself. You don't even touch the accelerator. So the car's driving itself, and then you go into these ruts in the road, and the ruts take the steering for you. So you're just sat there, not even touching the steering wheel, the brake, the accelerator, nothing on the pedals. And it's like a Disneyland ride. This thing's just crawling away up the hill. And then when you get to the top of a hill, you've obviously got to steer. But you could drive up a hill if you wanted to. But as soon as you come to the top of a hill and let the front wheels drop off the top, you take your feet off the pedals and the engine brakes, and it brakes the car as it rolls down the hill. So that's great fun, we got that. Then we go around a corner, and the guy says to me, stick your wheels on that bank over there. So I put the left-hand wheels up on this bank, and the whole car starts to lean over and lean over and lean over even more. And he's going, it's okay, you can take more than this. So, well, fine. The women in the back are screaming. we get back down, then we go around a horseshoe, sort of like they call it the carousel. It's like a horseshoe-shaped bank. Again, you put your wheels onto the bank and you drive around this horseshoe. And the guy next to me is chuckling away because he can hear the women in the back of the car getting really nervous and crying and all this type of thing. And that's why I'm thinking, well, as long as he's chuckling, we're all okay. So we come off the carousel and he said, oh, well done, that was great. I said, well, I knew I was okay because you were chuckling confidently. He said, oh, no, we were pretty close there. Oh, now you tell me.
Yeah.
It was pretty steep, but it was great fun.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic. So, that's great.
So after that, we went and had some lunch.
How far was it for you, Paul, to come down to Brands Hatch? Is it quite a way? Well, it's quite close to us.
I live on the Wirral, so yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really close to us.
220, 220 miles.
Oh, wow.
I'll be driving past it tonight working.
Oh, nice. Six hours during total journey time. But that's we did stop off a couple of times. So it's a five-hour journey, really, but it took us 6 hours together in the back of a minibus that was not good.
Yeah. Four of that is on the M25, but there we go.
Yeah. Well, you say that. No, actually, it wasn't a bad journey. I mean, we kept moving all the way through. My only concern was going to be Dartford, which snarled up a little bit on the way down because we came down from the top of the M25 round to come down. But then when we went home, we actually went down the bottom of it because it was quicker to go around that way, apparently. So,
yes. Yeah.
Which brings its own fun and games when you go past Reigate to that bleak concrete expansion joints.
That's horrible, yeah, that bit. I hate that bit of the 25.
No. Yeah, not good.
Yeah, it's not nice, is it? My in-laws live around there that way, and it's always that bit we've been in.
So. My sister-in-law lives down there. She lives in Red Hill.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, it's nice. Nice area.
It is. Mm. Far too posh for us.
But would you do it again? So similar to these guys, when they've done their rally, would you do experiences like that
again? Oh, definitely, yeah. I'd love. I mean, it's taken me this long to get this one done. I mean, I've done experiences like this before. So the first one was back in before you guys, all of you guys were born, I would assume, 1986-ish.
I was around.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, only just, but yeah. Yeah, so 86, I went down to Silverstone and drove a Formula Ford. So that's basically a racing car with no wings, no slick tyres, just normal standard tyres. I drove that up and down the Hangar Straight, which was about the best you could do in those days. Then in 2001, I did, again, another Formula Ford in Wigan. There's a track called the Three Sisters. It's basically a very long go-kart track or a very short racetrack, depending on how you look at it. And we took a Formula Ford around there. That was pretty good. Again, I was pretty quick around there. And I've done lots of go-karting. Then out for my 40th birthday, I was given a Ferrari F40 drive around Silverstone, which was the bottom part of the circuit, so the national circuit. So around the back end. Well, what used to be the back end, which is now actually the main straight and back end of the circuit. That was great fun. And so that had really been sort of everything I'd done up to that point. 165 down the Hangar Straight is pretty nice, must admit.
Yeah.
And bouncing off curbs. Really great. Back in 1991, I was made redundant from my job and there was a bit of a depression at that time. So I thought, well, maybe I should change jobs, change tact. Maybe I should try and become a racing driver. Or at least a mechanic, along those lines. So get into Formula One as a mechanic or working in a team or something, even if I can't make it as a racing driver. But I thought, let's try racing driver first. And back in 91, of course, there's no real internet. So looking down all the sport, Auto Sport and Motor Magazine, all this type of thing, there was an advert there, go to Halifax, which is not a town up north. And there's a disused airfield. And you will be given laps in a Volkswagen Golf with a race instructor. He will tell you, how to race, where to brake, where to accelerate, etc. So, right, okay, we'll do that then. So I took my knackered 850 two-ball rally type Ford Fiesta up to Halifax, which could hardly make it up some of the hills that I was driving up there. Parked up, and the instructor there says, "Right, yes, my name's Michael. Nice to meet you. Let's go and try driving these cars." So he jumps in the car, drives around this circuit, lots of cones dotted around an airfield, and he drives around and says, "Right, you need to brake at this cone. You need to do this bit. Right. Okay, so we come back in, we swap, I get in, I drive off, and like I say, because I've been doing a lot of driving of racing games, I shoot off, ready for the qualifying lap. Boom, we're out. Within two corners, he's grabbing the wheel off me, saying, "You're going too fast. Please slow down." So then we sort of go around a few times. He says, "Okay, that's really good." He says, "Right, we'll have a break, and then after that, we'll go out and we'll do some proper, we'll move the cones and we'll break a bit later and all this type of thing." Great, okay. So while we were having our lunch, I got talking to him and I said, "What are you doing at the moment? Are you a race driver?" He said, "Oh, yes." He said, "I'm in Formula 3. I'm just trying to get some money together, to help me get through the winter, and then we can get some sponsorship and then we'll go back into Formula 3. Okay, fine. So we get back in the car after lunch and we drive around this track. And by the end of it, he's shouting at me, "Faster, faster, faster, brake later, brake later, brake later." So we go around and turns out I'm the fastest person there. There's about four of us, five of us, six of us, however many were there. There was an old fella. There was a young girl. Hardly surprising that I'm going to be quick. They did send a letter to me saying, "Please come back and try. We'll do an advanced course." Well, yeah, but I haven't got any money. I've been made redundant. So that was all my money gone.
Oh, no.
Every Formula One driver starts with that story, doesn't he? I had no money, so I remortgaged my house, or a friend of mine lent me £1,000 and I went to do something. No, it didn't work for me. Well, my parents were not interested in motor racing and didn't want me to do anything so dangerous, so that wasn't going to happen. Anyway, the guy who was my instructor, was a gentleman called Michael Vergers. And Michael Vergers was a Dutch driver who took the Radical car, which is like a two-seater sports car. It looks like a Le Mans-style car, open cockpit. Production car with standard tyres around the Nürburgring, and held the record for so long that has only just been beaten for a production car around the Nürburgring. So I was taught by one of the best. One of the fastest.
Amazing.
You see it on YouTube. Go onto YouTube, you'll find it. Michael Vergers, Vergers. Halfway around the lap, he's doing his seatbelt up and he's there in jeans and a t-shirt, so the helmet, And the sound of the V12 engine it's amazing. So so that was sort of one thing that I really enjoyed. Anyway, back to Brands Hatch. We finish our lunch at Brands Hatch and off we go to the rally stage, where they gave us a Toyota GT86. I can't remember what car it was.
Yeah.
Coupe. And so we jump into one of these things. I am so low down, the steering wheel is at my eye level. The front of the car is just a little bit higher. And I can't see a thing. I'm straining over the front to see that, I said, I think I'm a bit low here. I can't see. And the instructor next to me says, "Don't worry, I'll tell you where to go." Yeah, I know that's the idea of a rally, but the idea is also to see where you're actually going. If you say left, I want to stay on the road here, so I'm straining to see over it. Anyway, off we go. We do a little circuit. It probably takes about a minute or minute and a half or so to drive around. Quite decent length of time, really. And we do that a couple of times. And he says, "Right, okay." He says, "You're doing really well." He says, "Continue what you're doing." He says, "Just go a little bit quicker." And he says, "And keep into this corner." I said, "Mate, I can't see the corner. I literally cannot see the corner. I don't even know where the bank is. I can see there's a bank there because I can see it as I come up to it, but then it disappears." So you'll be fine. So off we go. Belt. I really put the foot down, really go for it. Go a little bit wide here and there, but we're still okay. And I finished the lap and he says, and I'm thinking, "Oh, brilliant. That was the timed lap. That was really, really great. I really put in a good time." And he said, "That was fantastic. He said, that was a really good lap." He says, "Now do it again for the timed lap." Went, "Oh, come on. I thought that was the timed lap." so off we had to go again. So we went again and it was fine. It was good. But there were a lot of better drivers there. You could see there was some guys that were really flooring it and they had some decent control. One of my colleagues, got up to the top of the hill. And the idea is you come down, and it's like a sort of like a little sort of weavy road, you know, so it goes to the left, goes to the right, and goes to the left again. He came far too wide, got onto the grass, didn't think to brake, he just accelerated, came down the hill, cut all the corners, and ended up in the field. When he drove the car back onto the track, there was this horrible grating noise. And when they pulled him over to one side, one of the instructors ran over and pulled out the wheel arch insert that was hanging off. So we would all say, that's not fair. His car's lighter now. So that was, that was an experience. That was fantastic fun. That was really, because you just slide the car, the things just moving around all over the place. The back wheel is rear wheel drive, so the back wheels are just all over the place. And that was so much fun. I think everybody said that was one of their favorites. Then we moved on to the track. And we're using the Indy circuit, which is the first half of the circuit, the small half of the circuit. Which is probably just as well, because I probably would have killed myself around the back end of the circuit if I'd been left to my own devices. And we jump into a BMW M4. This is obviously high-powered, 520 horsepower. It's got traction control, anti-lock brakes, air conditioning if you wanted it on, fully automatic or semi-automatic, depending on what you wanted to do. And they said, right, okay, you'll get an instructor. He will tell you what's going to happen. So this 12-year-old lad gets in next to me. I'm hardly joking. I think he's about 17. But anyway, this kid gets in next to me. And he said, right, okay. He said, have you ever driven an automatic before? And I said, not really. I said, but I shouldn't really say this, but I've got a steering wheel at home and pedals, and I drive a lot of computer games. And so I'm used to the paddles and the idea of driving automatics. He said, no, that's fine. He said, that's okay. He said, have you ever driven a Brands Hatch before? I said, thousands of laps, but again, on the computer game, not actually here. I said, but I have been here before. He said, oh, you've been here before? I said, yeah. I said, 86 when I saw the Formula One Grand Prix and Nigel Mansell won the race. And I've been here for a couple of rallycross events. And he said, oh, right, rallycross. Do you know a driver called Will Gollop? And I said, well, yeah, funny you should mention that. I said, I don't know him personally. I said, but he's... there's a picture in one of the auto sports from about 1988, as when they had the British round of the rallycross here. Me and my friend were stood at the first corner, and Will Gollop went past, and the auto sport photographer took a picture, and there's me and him in the background with Will Gollop's car right in front of us. He says, my dad knows Will Gollop. He's a good friend of ours. I went, oh, my God. So it's just amazing. So I'm having this great conversation with this lad. And I said, so are you a racing driver? I said, do you actually race? He said, yes, I'm in the Mini Challenge. Well, the Mini Challenge is you buy a Mini and you race it along with everybody else who drives identical Minis. And he's won two races this year. And the Mini Challenge follows the British Touring Cars round. So it's quite
prestigious event. Weekend.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. It's the last weekend, wasn't it? So I said, oh, wow. Okay. Well, I'll keep an eye out for you. The future events, I could say, I used to drive with that guy. So anyway, off we go in the BMW and we drive out. And then, sure enough, as we're going around, there's a cone that you're supposed to, at the side of the road there. He says, right, when you see that cone, brake at that cone. And then turn in. He says, and what you want to do is hit the apex, and there's a cone on the inside of the corner. He says, hit that apex and then drive out and you'll be fine. So we go around, we do a couple of laps and we do pretty good. There's a big sign that says brake at the end of the first straight. A Brands Hatch, you two guys will know, the first corner at Brands Hatch is a right-hand bend that drops probably about 120 feet straight down and then comes back up again into a hairpin. So we belt round this first corner. He says, okay, brake here. So I braked. He says, right, turn in. So I turn in. And before I even got to the apex, he goes, right, accelerator, floor it. And we belt our way down the hill. We hit the bottom and go up the other side, and we just sink into the seat. The compression that you get out of it is incredible, because you just go down and then back up again. Oh my goodness, I wasn't expecting that. But when you turn into that first corner, all you can see, because of the BMW's got a roof, obviously, is a circuit right in front of you. There's tarmac at 90 degrees right in front of you, upwards. Where's the sky gone? And then you come down, you go up the hill, and all you can see is sky. You go, where's the track gone? It's a mad, absolute madness of a corner. Beautiful. Absolutely loved it. So anyway, we did a few laps of that. And at the end of it, we pulled back into the pits. And this child says to me, you should have been a racing driver. I said, you're kidding me. I said, you couldn't have told me this 20 years ago when, you know, actually, I, you know, could have done something. Mind you, 20 years ago, he wasn't even born.
Yeah. From beyond.
So said, yes. So he said, no, he says, no, it's really good. He said, no, he says, I've only been doing this for 3 days. He said, instructing for 3 days, he said, at Rambaran's Hatch, but you're the best person I've taken out. I went, oh, wow, that's really amazing. I said, because probably he's taken about, I don't know, 180 people, if that's the case, 65 people for 3 days. So I thought, well, and I know it's not a big gene pool, but, you know, even so, I'm taking that. You know? So, So he said, no, he said, really amazing. He said, you may have noticed, he says, I hardly said anything as we were driving around. And it was only then I twigged. I thought, actually, he was pretty quiet over the last few laps. And he had his own brake pedal and a kill switch as well. And he didn't press either of them. So I was really happy. I was really pleased with that. So so after that, we then jumped into a Formula 4. Now, Formula 4 is a racing car with wings. This is the first sort of car that you get with wings. I can't remember the horsepower that it has, but it, 185, because it's less than the car that I've got, which I thought was quite funny, but obviously a lot quicker. So they basically say, right, jump in, do a few laps of Brands Hatch, away you go. And of course, it's got the flappy paddles, you know, the gears with the paddles. It's got an accelerator, a brake, and a clutch, but you only use clutch for the first gear. Once you get moving, you can then use the brake and the accelerator and the paddles. So of course, I just moved my left foot over to the brake, and we left foot brake, and off we go. We go into there's two people in front of me. We drive out. I overtake the first person because they're really nervous and slow, and they say, if you're going to be overtaken, move over to the right. The person will overtake on the left. Right, that's fine. And everybody stuck to that. That was really good. We get round to the end of the first lap, and I'm getting ready now, because sort myself out. This is it. Got to do a fast lap now, get a good time in, because it's all timed. We belt down the first corner, turn into it, accelerate, boom, we're down, we compress, we go up, and the woman in front of me spins off. Thanks very much. That's a fast lap gone.
Yellow thank flags.
You. Yep. Red flags. She's put it in the sand, and she can't get it out. So she's got to take a truck to her, get her out, and off she goes. So she only got a lap and a bit. You don't go back out again. So we come back into the pits. So obviously, while we're waiting, I thought, hang on, I'm in the front now. That's it. When we go out the pits, I'm in the lead. Right. So off we go. We go off again. And I had the best time of my life for 15 minutes. We just melted around that track. I was braking later and later and later. We started braking at around about 200 yards, which is, you know, there was a big sign saying brake, but it was around about the 200 yard marker. I was braking it at the 100 yard marker at the first corner. And I could have braked later, but we ran out of time. And the cars are not going as fast as they can. You know, so they could, you know, they're doing about 105, they reckon, across the main straight. They can do a lot more than that if they release the rev limiter they had. The rev limiter was about 4,000 revs. Anyway, we're whizzing around. I'm braking later and later and later and later and later. And then the checkered flag comes up. Oh, man, I didn't even touch what this car can do. And it was so much fun. The only problem I had was that when I got in it, I couldn't reach the pedals. And they'd set this up for the small people. The bigger people had a different setup in different cars. So what they give you a big, thick, padded cushion that goes behind you. And that pushed me further forward, but I still couldn't reach the pedals. And the guy said, no, you're sitting too upright. You need to slide down. So I slid down more and I got them. I thought, oh yeah, that's okay. No, I can see. I've got brake. I've got the mirrors. I can do all of that. What they didn't say is when you go around the first corner and turn right, you slide over to the left because there's no padding at the sides. So I went around the right-hand corner and did left-hand corner and slid to the right. So I'm just all over the place sliding around in this car. I really wanted more padding. I also wanted more time and, you know, better slick tires. And, you know, that would have been really nice. Mm. Anyway, we get to the end of that. It was so, so much fun. We all came out like big Cheshire cats. We then go to the back to our place where we had our lunch, and they said, right, you know, it was prize giving. So they said, okay, so what we'll do is give a prize for the best go-karter, the best Land Rover, the best rally, the best BMW, the best F4, etc., and the best Caterham. And they got through all of the disciplines and got to the F4 and said, and the fastest driver around Brands Hatch, Paul Wright. Oh my God, yes, I'll take that any day. Fastest person in a race car, that'll do me. So I was just so pleased with that. You get a nice little trophy, really solid, you know, glass trophy that's, you know, really, really nice. And they sat down, they said, and then there's a trophy for the person who has impressed the the instructors in every discipline has been the consistent throughout the day. Paul Wright. Oh my God, your driver of the day as well. 64 people there, couldn't beat me. That'll do me. Quite happy with that. So, yeah, it was amazing. It was the best day I'd had in years, the best driving experience I'd ever had. No way I could afford to, well, I could afford to do it by myself, but it's, you know, probably the whole lot was about £1,000. So it's, you know, each discipline, you know, I mean, just the it's something like £250 for the BMW and the F4. And which you get 15 minutes of each, which I would have been quite happy to have done that and come away with that. But everything else just was, you know, like the cherry on the cake. It was really, really good.
Incredible.
Yeah, I know I've done the M4 Master as well, Paul, when it was the best. I had the best time in there. In those single seaters was just 15 minutes goes so quickly, doesn't it? And before you gave that massive long story, I was going to be like, what was your best time? Because I got fastest time of the day as well. Ooh. But I was on a damp track. So I said to the instructor,
this is no good. We're the last ones to go out. The temperature has dropped. The tires will be cold. He said, oh, yeah, but the engines will be more powerful. The temperature drops. These engines will be
cold. Cold air,
cold air. Okay, fine. But no, we are supposed to find out our times because one of our colleagues asked if he could have all the telemetry across and the scores and everything. I don't think he's got it yet. But then again, they were all pissed off that I won, so I don't think they were too bothered about finding out.
They don't want to get any more bragging rights.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they probably got the email last week.
Yeah, that's it. No, we're not saying that. Yeah.
Shop about his two bloody trophies. Oh, don't tell him.
So I know what time is a good time around there. What time is your time? Okay, damn, Pat.
Mine was 68.54 around it. So,
but a damp track. Wow, that's quick.
That's not bad. Thanks. Yes, yeah.
No, that is quick. They reckon in dry, 64 to 67 is good. So if you're 68, that's very good.
I thoroughly enjoyed myself. We had a great time. We had a few, because it was damp, there was a few people who span out, like you said, but I managed to keep it on. And that's the downside, is they're so expensive, but they're brilliant. I've done one at Brands Hatch and one at Thruxton. Thruxton's good because it's a very fast circuit.
Oh, it's just flat out all the way around, isn't it?
And that was good. And when we went and did that, my father-in-law, we got him a gift where he went round in an M3 and it was driven by Tiff Nadell.
Oh.
He comes down for the day and he took my father-in-law Mike out for like 5 hot laps in it. And it looked amazing. Wow. So,
the man who can't keep a steering wheel straight even when he's going in a straight line. I mean, he's just like his arm. He's just always all over the place. Around the corner, it's like... You could tell he did a couple of episodes of Top Gear as the stick because they were short of a driver, so they got Tiff Nadell in to do it. And you could tell when it's him because he's just all over the place in the car.
Soaring at the wheel.
Yeah, that's it. Elbows out, yeah. Oh, it is just the best. I'd love that. You can do exactly the same thing up at Alton Park, which is my local circuit, which is only half an hour away from here. And my boss, who could have come with us, if he hadn't broken his ribs a couple of weeks before. And if he had, me and him would have killed ourselves trying to beat each other on that track. He's done the one at Alton Park and everything's the same except the Formula 4s have a gear stick. They don't have the paddles. And I wouldn't have been able to handle the gear stick. It's on the wrong side. So my timing is out with because I'm used to going left-hand gear and left foot clutch. But if then you're doing right-hand gear and left-hand clutch and it's the H pattern's the wrong way around and I just can't get it.
I had a similar car like that at Thruxton. I was too big for the Formula Ones they had there, so I'm like 6'3", so I couldn't fit in it, so they gave me like, it was almost like a bit like the Radical. It's like a Le Mans style like open cockpit car, and that had a little 4-speed H gearbox, and that was a bit odd to drive, but again, so much fun around Thruxton.
They're brutal, aren't they? The Formula cars are brutal. When you start them up, the whole thing's shaking anyway, you know, sort of expect that. And then you stick it into gear and it goes, and you hear that clunk. And then you take your foot off the accelerator and 99% of the people in those cars went and stalled.
Yeah.
And it was dunk and stalled again. But when it stalled, it went dunk, 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 dunk. It's broken the gearbox. It's just like bits of metal all clanking together. It was horrible sound. I've got it all on my phone. I can play the sound. But I knew that they are vicious to try and get off the line. So you, and eventually people were revving it up, boom, come off the clutch, and wheels spinning out of the pits, which was a bit worrying. But that's the way to get them off the line. So I got it right first time when we came in because of the red flag. I couldn't get it started, and the gears must have locked. And every time I did the slightest movement on the clutch, and it just it stalled it. And it just before I'd even got anything, and they said, "Well, put your foot on the clutch." So I did. Tried to start the engine, and it wouldn't. It just wouldn't engage. You could hear it turning over. So in the end, they had to get me to stop the car, power it into, power it up so they could get it into neutral. Then rock the car backwards and forwards because it was obviously stuck in the gear somewhere, and it just wasn't coming out of it. So eventually, once they did that, then we could get it moving. But again, it was the same thing. You got to rev it up, and there's very sort of people just take the foot off the clutch and think that's it. But you've got to press the accelerator as well to get the revs, keep it going, and that way you get it going. But it was then you're driving down the pits going, "Oh my god, what the hell is this?" But once it's going and once it's doing 100 mile an hour, it's exactly what it's designed for, and it's absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Yeah, the tyres just did never seem to run out of grip, but of course we're not doing the full speed, are we? So,
no.
Sorry, I don't know that one.
How well, rude! That, then.
There we go.
She hasn't got the grip.
I don't know who she's talking to because I didn't say anything.
I was going to say you didn't fart then, did you, Dan?
I might have been.
I didn't know that tune.
I'll name that tune in full.
I don't know that.
No, she's still going off on that.
Oh dear.
Yes. Thank you for that. right, interrupted by an AI. I suppose I better close this up. Well, that's been our cars special of the Cosmic Pizza podcast. So our special is gone at breakneck speed of a Lamborghini with a Pikachu sticker on it. So the engine grease is cold, and we hope you've been filling your tanks to the brim and hopefully not costing you too much in the cost of living crisis. So join us next time for another delicious slice of life in the Cosmic Pizza podcast.
We've been your deliverers today. Please leave a tip at the door by subscribing for future deliveries, rate and review our service, and we hope you come back for more helpings next time. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and TikTok by searching for the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. If you'd like to send us an MP3 file, you can email us on cosmicpizzapodcast@gmail.com. And we'll catch you on the next episode of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network. Your station for all things geek.